Hey everybody, Maria from Magic the Amateuring here. You're about to listen to a very special episode of our podcast that was made possible by Wizards of the Coast when they let me fly to PAX. They gave me a badge, hotel room, and flight, and I was able to interview members of Wizards R&D, Wizards Creative Team, as well as a competitor in the World Championship at PAX, Paolo Vito Damo de Rosa. I wanted to release a special episode because it's always a great moment when we get an extra sneak peek into how Wizards does what they do. It was amazing to talk with everybody about the process of designing a new set like Kaladesh and what goes into that. Everywhere from trying to make vehicles happen, which is a really interesting story, by the way, all the way to how they represent diversity in the art and the choices they make when designing a new set. You'll want to stick around to hear Mark Rosewater, who, by the way, tells me his favorite, cutest card of all time. I have an emotional moment with Mel Lee. I don't know if you can hear it in the recording, but I remember getting a little misty-eyed when we're talking about women in gaming. I really loved my conversation with Jeremy Jarvis, who used to be the art director at Wizards of the Coast and was actually an artist on some cards way back in the day. And his new role is also equally as interesting, and he told me some really neat stories from behind the veil, if you will. Sean Main is just an amazing guy who's really funny and has a theater background, so we connected on that. And he also loves Gremlins, so that's always a good sign. I also talked to one of my favorite people in the universe, Melissa DeTora. She should be one of your favorite people, too. And if she's not after this interview, I don't know what to tell you anymore. I mean, she says her favorite Pusheen, for crying out loud. I also talked to Kimberly Krynas, who gives me a little behind-the-scenes look at developing a world, building a world for Magic, which is really interesting. And I chat with Ben Hayes, who gives me a little bit of a peek inside Magic R&D. And of course, we can't forget Paolo Vito Damo de Rosa, who competed in the World Championship and gave me a little behind-the-scenes look at what that's like to compete on Magic's largest stage. This episode, of course, brought to you in part by the patrons on patreon.com/mtacast who make everything we do possible. Thank you so much for your support. I'm here with Paolo Vito Damo de Rosa. Thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, hello.
So how has your week been here at PAX? What a crazy whirlwind it must have been.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming, the whole production, the show, like both the Magic part and the whole PAX part. It's just so many people.
How did you feel with how the World Champs went for you?
It went so-so. I went 7-7, which in any tournament would be awful. But in this tournament, like you can't really expect something great coming in. Obviously, you want to win, but you know you're not a favorite to do very well because everyone is very good. So I feel average. I had an average result. It could be better, but it could also be worse.
You're my favorite, Paolo?
Oh. Sorry, what?
So, did you...
That got me off guard. What?
I've shocked him. What was your strongest format overall?
I think Standard was probably my strongest format. I've historically been better in Constructed formats than Limited. And it was the tournament. It was the format I did better. I went 3-1 in Standard. 2-4 in Limited. It was not very good. And 2-2 in Modern.
What were you playing in Standard?
I played the Timura Merge deck. Very similar to what Oliver is playing in the top four. A little bit more Emerge, I think. Less Emrakul, who has 3 Emrakuls, we have 1. Yeah, it was the same deck that Sam Pardee, Luis Carfargas, and Mike Sigrist played. I think our deck was really good. We did very well in Standard. It was our best format.
Is it really hard to try and figure out the metagame for a tournament like this when everybody is so good and it's kind of on a weird, different other level?
Yeah, it is. For Standard, not so much. But for Modern, there's so many decks that is very different from a normal tournament. Like, if you go to a Grand Prix, you know that, for example, take Affinity. It's possible that Affinity is like between 7 and 12% of the field. But that's it. You're not going to be paired against 5 Affinity decks in a row. It's just not going to happen because there's so many decks to choose from. And in this tournament, if two teams decide to play Affinity, it could be over a third of the field. So you really have to prepare differently, I think. Like, we expect it, for example, for the Death Shadow Zoo deck to be the most popular deck. We thought there were maybe two teams who were going to play it, and no one played it. So, like, at the deck we expected to be 30% of the metagame was 0. That's never going to happen in a GP. In a GP, you're never going to be off by more than a couple percentage points. And in this, we were off by so much, it was kind of devastating for us.
Wow, that's crazy. I was expecting Death Shadow as well. What did you end up playing, and why did you choose that deck?
We ended up playing Abzan, just a normal version, with Noble Hierarchs. We chose it because we thought that Shadow Zoo was going to be a very popular deck. We thought Inktai was going to be popular, maybe Affinity, and we thought we had good matchups against those while having slightly even-ish matchups against the other things. And we didn't expect the big mana decks to be present. Those are historically your bad matchups, like Scapeshift and Tron. We thought people weren't going to play those. So.
Be real with me. Did anybody ever consider playing Boggles?
Not from my team, no.
Dang it. I guess I'll just have to make it to the World Championship to get Boggles back in there.
Well, last year they played Boggles. There was a whole team that played Boggles. It was, I think, four players. So this year no one played it, yeah.
So how do you feel going forward in Magic? Like, we just saw a bunch of Kaladesh stuff released this weekend. How does that new set feel to you already?
It's very exciting. It's very different. It's also not only the new set, it's that a whole set is rotating. So, like, it doesn't matter what happens with the new set, things are already going to be different. And, yeah, the new set seems very exciting. Like, the vehicles mechanic, and we've seen some very good cards already. Like, I don't know all the names yet, but, like, that 6/5 that kills something when it comes to play and wind attack seems very good. There's a 5-mana 4/4 that puts 4 counters, so you can just be an 8/8 trample or pump your other creatures. The history of the world seems very interesting to me, so I'm looking forward to it.
And now you've got a 40-hour flight home.
Yeah, I do. It's a pretty bad flight. I have two connections and 12-hour layovers each, but it was what I could do to get the flights I wanted. So,
I mean, you put in a lot of work traveling all the time to come to lots of different tournaments. It's always great to see you here, so thanks for talking to me.
Well, thank you.
My name is Sean Main, and I'm a senior designer at Wizards of the Coast, working on Magic, and I was co-lead designer of Kaladesh.
And tell me again, what does that mean to be a co-lead designer?
So that means that designers are the first part of the process, and we're really coming in with the blue sky vision for a set. Very much we are kind of translating the world and the setting and the overall ideas into card designs, and its development is the second part of the process, and they're much more concerned with the minutiae, and they have a lot of creative work, but their tuning is much more important for them.
All right, vehicles is a huge thing that you've announced with this set. I heard at the panel that they'd wanted to do them for a long time. And I think as just a Magic player, I've kind of thought, well, this would be kind of a cool thing to happen. So it's really neat to see them finally come to fruition. Tell me a little bit about the story behind building vehicles and how you ended up with the crew mechanic.
Sure. So vehicles went through a ton of iteration. And like you say, it is something that we've had our eye on for a long time. We never quite had the right design or the right setting that really pushed us. I know Ethan Fleischer during Theros was really interested in designing ships, which was the first we ever touched on it. The very first version we had, like at the very beginning of the design process, was much more like equipment in reverse, and they didn't have any power and toughness ever, and you'd attach creatures to them, and that was very messy, and it didn't have a lot of the flavor. You'd get three creatures in there, and then one of them would attack, and what was that supposed to mean or represent? And eventually we tried them functioning a little bit like creatures once they were properly crewed, and that was really fun. You got the skyship actually in the air fighting against the dragon, which is fulfills a lot of those fantasies for having that skyship. So it was a long, long road with a lot of like real technical turns of the exact timing mechanisms and exactly what the numbers were supposed to be. And for a while, crew meant the number of creatures you're supposed to put in there. But I'm real happy with how they've turned out.
Yeah, because on first blush, when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, you tap them and then they get whatever that vehicle's thing is. They get haste from that vehicle. They get flying from that vehicle. And that was something you guys like thought about initially?
Yeah, we had designs that the very first round looked a lot like that.
That's so crazy. Was it just too powerful?
No, it wasn't that it was too powerful. It particularly, you had kind of weird creative things going on. I mean, some of it was just tricky because you'd get like messy battlefields where like, how do I represent four cards attached to this one card and then I'm going to tap the creatures? But some of it was really weird, like that dynamic of like, two creatures in the hot air balloon are attacking. This third one is not, and that's weird. And we were layering on mechanics initially that are like, well, they all have to attack together, or all block together, and that was also not very satisfying. So that fell apart for a bunch of reasons, some of them more mechanical and some of them like the story just wasn't working.
Oh, that's so fascinating. So what was the most energy anybody ever had in playtest?
That's a great question. I can think of personally getting up to 13, 14 energy, and then all the things that spent energy were killed. So I'm sitting there with this huge stockpile, like really hoping I top deck that sweet energy card, and I think I lost those games. But.
How do you feel when you design something awesome and you see it come to fruition? What's that like?
It's really, really fun. I mean, so much of the process is sitting in meeting rooms and brainstorming, and and playing a lot of really bad games of Magic along the way and figuring out what you learn from them, that it's so satisfying to actually get things revealed and get to see people react to them and be like, okay, that was as exciting as I hoped it was going to be.
What would victory be like to you, where you'd be like, yes, Kaladesh has hit what I wanted it to do? What would that look like?
Ah, that's a great question. I feel like the promise of Kaladesh is so much this like hopeful, beautiful setting, that victory is just like seeing people come up with all kinds of neat new things. I really think this is this awesome setting that is going to become a staple, where in a few years people are going to be demanding to go back to Kaladesh, and I think that's what victory is going to look like.
You were hired under the Great Designer Search too.
Yes.
And you got in. So you were kind of somebody on the outside, and then you became somebody on the inside. What was that transition like for you?
It's true. I'm an ascended fanboy. It was really interesting. My background is all theater and... Yeah. I was going to be a director for a while, and that didn't quite work out, and I've done a little bit of that since then, but I was very much interested in the game and was interested in kind of the design and the storytelling, and would do things like build cubes and curate experiences. Like, I feel like Magic is so much a game for game designers, because you can build experiences for your friends along the way, and... Once I got into the building and the Great Designer Search was this long, extensive interview process that I came in second. And once I was in the building, we had all these little teams for projects that were a few people, and you'd have a lot of like big creative questions. And I kept saying at first, like, oh, this is just like doing theater. And so few people in the office understood what I was talking about.
Is it weird, though, to be like, I played this game, I looked up to these people and the design of this game, and now I'm that person?
It's weird to think about, like, 13-year-old Sean Main, like, playing the game on friends' kitchen tables and being like, oh, yeah, someone else is that person now. It's really fun to think about.
There's a little Sean Main out there somewhere. That's probably
so creepy.
The wrong way to phrase it. Okay. Playtest names.
Yes.
Do you have any awesome playtest names that, of course, did not make it through to their final names in any set?
So few playtest names make it through. I wouldn't remember them if I hadn't just looked at these slides, but there are some real beauties. One of the first vehicles was the boat from Speed 2.
So good!
What is it called? Oval Chase Dragster began life as Blisteringly Fast Fire Car.
That's very literal.
Yeah, there were some real winners among those vehicles.
Did you ever have the Death Star?
Yes, actually, we did. I don't know if you're setting me up because you saw the slide, but...
Maybe I am.
No, that was a sweet design. I'm sad that one didn't make it all the way through.
What was that one?
Something along these lines, when it hit your opponent, it destroyed all creatures except for those inside it.
So. That's so cool. Okay, so like speaking about that, like I would imagine that your job requires a lot of quote unquote killing your own babies, as they say. Like you get attached to a design or something, you have to let it go, and you have to work, and you have to take hard criticism and feedback from your partners. How do you deal with that?
Usually, so we go through so many designs and we kill so many of our own babies along the way because there's just like such a process of iteration. I mean, it really is like thousands of cards will get churned through in the course of a set or they'll get tweaked back and forth. So like often by the time you get to the very tail end of the process, like it's, there's a few things you can point at as like, oh, this was what it started as. But and especially then, like, development is even more, like, going to churn through cards, and you have to learn to get attached to ideas more than executions, because execution is their idea, their whole wheelhouse. But, yeah, along the way, a whole lot of things you were excited about will get set aside, and if they're cool enough, you can resurrect them in a few years. I mean, the energy mechanic is Rosewater's white whale, in a sense. And, you know, it's found life now. So there's a lot of good ideas that get killed, but you will eventually find a home for them.
Why do you love Magic?
I love Magic because it is so much of an expression of the player's creativity. I mean, I was always a shy kid, and I love games as this excuse to hang out with people. And I love that you also get to bring your sense of yourself to every game through the decks that you choose to play and the formats that you choose to play. And I think that's really special for a game.
Do you have any advice for anybody who wants to grow up to be you?
Oh, 13-year-old Sean, hang in there. I would say, if you're interested in being a game designer or eventually becoming a designer for Magic, I'll give three pieces of advice. One is design things that people are going to actually play, and the biggest way to do that is build cubes. That's a really, really good opportunity to understand not just the individual cards, but how they connect with each other and look at that experience. Get really familiar. There's a wealth of design knowledge out there. Rosewater has written 10 bazillion words on design. They are all worth reading. And the third is bring something new to the table. I think it's really important that whatever artistic discipline you're going into, you have to know it really well, but you also have to know other things really well. And you want to come in and have something new to say and not just be rehashing the old thing. So, like, it was nice coming in with theater as a discipline and be able to bring in a fresh perspective. And I don't know what that is for you, 13-year-old Sean Main, but I'm sure there is something.
My name is Melissa DeTora. I work at Wizards of the Coast, and I am a playtester. And what that kind of means is it's a fancy way of saying I develop Magic cards. So I do a lot of playtesting. I work on a lot of development teams. Currently, I'm on Ham and Laughs. I draft a lot. I play a lot of FFL, which is Future League, which is the standard league that's happening a year or a year and a half from now. And I do a lot of Magic-related things.
So the first question comes from our Twitter, and it's the most hard-hitting one I have for you. What is your favorite Pusheen?
Okay, so I use a lot of Pusheen stickers, so this is a really difficult question for me to answer. So generally, if I'm, you know, like on the move, driving in a car or whatever, I'll use the scooter one.
This is great.
I also like the sushi one quite a bit, so whenever there's food involved, sushi. So
did you ever call it Sushin?
No, I never called it Sushin, but maybe now I will.
Great answer. I'm glad we could start this interview off on the right foot. Everybody knows you're a fantastic Magic player. You've had just a ton of success, and you're back now working at Wizards of the Coast. What does it mean for you to work at WotC?
So I've been playing Magic for 19 years, and there was a point where I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but all I wanted to do was play Magic, you know? And I had no idea that working at Wizards was even possible for me, like, 5 years ago. You know, I was playing Magic on the Pro Tour, or not even on the Pro Tour 5 years ago. I was, you know, grinding PTQs, just playing Magic, mostly for fun. And then when it hit me that I could make a career out of Magic, I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. This game that I've played for most of my life, I can actually turn it into a job. So I guess to answer your question, it like pretty much means everything to me.
You spend a lot of time at the office and a lot of time thinking about Magic. Would you say it's about 95% of your brain space, or what would you rate it at?
It's really close to 100. sometimes I sleep too, and I'm not sure what I think about when I'm sleeping because I tend to not remember. But it's possible that during that time I don't think about Magic.
So drafting and playing in the FFL has got to just be like a crazy, bizarre experience for you when you are, you know, in your past life, we're used to just like having to figure all this stuff out on the Pro Tour and at the same speed as everybody else playing the game. And now you're like, oh, I'm a year ahead and inventing new decks that nobody's ever even thought about before.
Yeah, totally. One huge difference, though, is the amount of change that happens in the FFL and during these playtest drafts. So one draft for a particular set will be completely different from the next one, just because we'll, you know, make changes to 20 cards or something. And FFL, the same thing. You know, I could make a deck. The deck might be incredibly broken or unfun or not work. And then, like, you know, a certain card will either just get killed, or we would just have to, like, make changes to make this deck not as strong, or make changes to make a deck stronger, you know? So changes happen, like, so frequently.
Have you ever made a totally broken deck in the FFL?
Daily. We all do.
You're like, yeah, no big deal. So this is one of my favorite questions to ask, but I don't know if you've had, how much time you've had to maybe experience this, is that if there was any decks that you guys found in Future League that never ended up in Standard.
Yeah, actually, this does happen quite a bit. Yeah, I'm not really sure what I am allowed to say about this, but yeah, this does happen for sure. And sometimes I'll talk to a friend about a card and they're like, oh, I really wonder why, you know, card X is not, like, why people aren't playing it. And I would be thinking, yeah, I don't understand either, because we played a ton of this card and I think the card's like really cool and fun and I think people should be playing it more, you know? So yeah, definitely. But like my coworker, Sam Stoddard, he writes a column on Daily MTG called Latest Developments, and all of the info that I am not sure I'm allowed to say or not, like, he says. So if you guys want to know more about FFL process and like basically what I do, you should totally check out his articles.
Tell me, what's like a typical day for you in the office?
Well, so we do a ton of playtests, like I said. We do file passes, which is basically just reading through a card set, and you know, if something is off, make a comment about it, or like discuss it with the lead of the set and be like, hey, this card is off because of reason, you know, that kind of thing. We also debate a lot about just various Magic topics. We read Magic articles, we consume content, so all of you content creators, yes, we probably do read your stuff and watch your videos. Yeah, we just talk about upcoming, you know, stuff we're working on a lot. Have a lot of meetings, that kind of stuff.
So for most people, coming into work and doing a draft would be about just about the best thing that ever happened to them. How do you feel?
Yeah, I remember my first day at Wizards, and the set that we were working on was actually Conspiracy 2, which just came out. So this was a year and a half ago. And they were like, oh, hey, do you want to be in this playtest draft? And I was like, I don't know what that is, but sure. And we just sat down and drafted. The cards weren't real. They were, you know, stickered cards, like playtest cards. So that was a little weird. But I did a draft and played a game of Magic. It was kind of surreal. So for all you guys at home, yes, drafting at work is the most fun thing you can do.
What would it mean to you to kind of like leave your mark on a set design? How would you like to see yourself represented in the product that comes out?
That's a really tough question to answer. So if I build a certain deck or work on it a lot and it became one of the more fun decks or one of the stronger decks in Standard, that would mean a lot to me. And also, another thing that I do is help balance limited format. So if the limited format is very enjoyable, that would also mean a lot to me. So I worked on Kaladesh, and I hope you guys are really excited for it. And a lot of the constructed cards, I had a very huge part in designing, and I also worked on the limited format a lot. So if you guys really like the limited format, that would mean the world to me.
I love gremlins. How do you feel about gremlins?
They're super cute. So here's a weird thing. For me, gremlins doesn't mean too much. I know it's like, you know, a red creature. And the reason why is because I didn't see any of the art. So I didn't really know how cute, creepy these little guys were. You know, they were just like, oh, this card just says the word gremlin on it. So it's a little different for me. But gremlins are great. Let's all go watch the 80s movie right now.
I really want to make a draft deck where I have a bunch of gremlins and they just pilot all of my vehicles in my deck. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. Like, the world will be a better place if gremlins are driving cars and flying airships.
There will be several accidents on local freeways, but it will be adorable. So, for you, what's your favorite thing about Kaladesh?
My favorite thing, so I really like energy from a gameplay perspective because it gives you so many options. So as someone who really likes draft, like me, you know, if you draft an energy deck, basically you can get energy with one card, spend it on a different card, or you can spend it on, you know, any of your energy cards. You can save it all up for one thing, or you can distribute it for a lot of different things. So it just gives you so many options. And it's like, most people like Magic because you never play the same game twice. Well, with energy, you will totally never play the same game twice.
What's the most energy you ever had in a playtest?
I'm not sure I can answer that.
Oh! Okay. Noted. Do you think you're going to miss playing competitively?
I do miss it, but like if I was given the choice, I would always take Wizards. It's just it's a really fun place to work. Everyone's great, and it's like very meaningful, challenging work. So, yeah, I do miss it, but, you know, I think I'm done with that phase of my life. I don't know, it's really tough for me. But, yeah, definitely miss it.
So there's a good story you have that involves a playmat from when you were a pro. Can you tell it?
Yeah, so this was during a time where I wasn't quite a pro. Like, I had played on pro tours, but I wasn't, like, as well known as I am now. So it was about maybe 5 or more years ago. It was during Cawblade, so whenever that was. And I was at this SCG IQ. And, you know, I'm just playing the tournament, you know. I'm, like, probably 4-0. Like, I ended up winning this tournament, but that's, like, kind of besides the point. But, you know, I was doing well in the tournament. I beat this player, and the player was, like, really upset. He's like, oh, wow, like, you know, this was my winning in for top 8, and I lost you. I can't believe I lost you. You're a girl. I can't believe I lost to a girl. This is ridiculous. I'm really upset. You know, and I'm like, whatever, I get this a lot, I don't care, I'm going to just sign the match slip and be on my way. So then during the top 8, he came up to me and he was like, oh my god, my friends just told me who you were, I'm really sorry, I had no idea, I'm so embarrassed, I'm really sorry I said all these things to you, will you sign my playmat?
Oh my god, that's surreal.
This is a real thing that happened, and all my friends were there laughing, and you know, even to this day, like, I get jokes, will you sign my playmat? So this is a story that I will just have forever now.
I mean, we were talking about this the other night, and you mentioned, like, this is something that happens to me all the time. And you mentioned that you had an LGS where you went to, and you felt like sometimes they were kind of being like, oh, sure, you can come in and play if you want.
Yeah, so first of all, this was a million years ago. I don't think this happens anymore, but when I was about 18 or so, and I was just starting to play competitively, I went to this local game store. And this game store was a huge game store. So it was just like a very competitive store, a lot of good players. Everyone wanted to be, they were aspiring pros. But like in actuality, they just thought they were way better than they were. And they just, you know, they thought they were great. They thought everyone else was bad. So here I come, this, you know, young girl wanting to play Magic. And I got a lot of things like, what are you even doing here? Like, you'll never do anything in this game. I don't understand the point of you doing this. You know, you should just stop. And, like, I remember the store owner said to me that you'll never do anything in this game. You know, And I don't know. Obviously, that's not what happened.
And now you're a national treasure. Well, on behalf of all players and female players, like, I just want to say thank you for being awesome and for continuing to do what you do and now working for Wizards and making great decisions from the inside.
This is Ben Hayes. I didn't get his introduction recorded, but we're going to jump right into the conversation with him.
What was your favorite part about designing for Kaladesh?
So, a lot. I was really excited to work on a happy, optimistic set after Battle for Zendikar, Oath of the Gatewatch, Shadows, and Eldritch Moon all being, like, very dire, a lot at stake, a lot of monsters, a lot of gloomy stuff, and I also worked on a lot of those sets. I worked on the design of Eldritch Moon. I worked on the development of Battle for Zendikar. And so I was kind of ready for a sunny, happy place where we were all trying to be inventors and pleasant, upbeat, just optimism and getting to work on cards and trying to find mechanics and themes and play patterns that made people feel that way. It was just really fun for me.
What kind of play patterns and mechanics do you think kind of fit that mood?
So the one thing that we really tried to do with Kaladesh was work on something we talked about as variants of gameplay, which means if you have a deck and your deck has a bunch of cards in it and you play a game with it and then you play another game with it and then you play three more games with it, those games, even if you play the same cards, are going to feel different. You're going to get to make different choices based on the order that you draw your cards in or what you're up against. And so mechanics like energy, where you can get energy from multiple sources and spend it in a mishmash of ways and figuring out what options you want to have. Fabricate, where you're making a choice between a servo and a plus one counter, and you might go one way or the other way any game. We really tried to embrace lots of different ways that the game can play out from the same deck.
Question, are you a Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan?
A little bit, probably not enough to give a satisfying answer to where the next question is going.
Just that you have cards called servos, and there's Tom Servos, one of the robots.
I do have some, so we have a bunch of blank cards in Magic R&D, and a lot of what happens with those blank cards is making playtest cards. But another thing that happens with those blank cards when they're sitting around is if you have a card that makes a token, we have people who like drawing their own tokens. So I might have some very fun servos on my desk still.
Yay! What can you point to in Kaladesh that you kind of feel like you own a little bit or that you're personally really proud of?
It's a funny answer, but the thing that I feel most connected to in Kaladesh is probably the vehicles. Work from tons of people went into the vehicles, so I wouldn't say that I own them, but vehicles went through so much iteration. We tried so many different versions. As we've talked about this week at PAX on our panels, we tried probably over 20 different versions of vehicles. And really being there, and every time we tried something new, having to sort of proof of concept it and come up with cards that work in Limited, think about cards that work in Constructed, I would never say that I own the design of vehicles, but I do feel like they're something that I put so much work into. And earlier today, at the opening ceremony, when the big word vehicle came up before we'd shown anyone the first card, I started to like get chills thinking about, okay, wow, people are actually going to see this for the first time.
Yeah, that must be an amazing feeling to just see the public react so positively to your designs. What's that like?
It's hard to explain besides, like, you know, some combination of butterflies and chills and freaking out a little bit. Watching the whole opening ceremony, and I'm sitting there in the crowd, and I know what's coming up, and I still found myself just, like, floored by everything, and the public's reaction's been great. And I mean, I've been at Wizards for a little over 3.5 years now, and it doesn't get old. I mean, it still feels like the first set that I worked on that came out.
So what was one of the more strange iterations of vehicles that you guys went through when you're trying to land on your final design?
I think the strangest one was probably Artifacts, where you paid mana to take one of your creatures and put it on the vehicle. And then the creature you put on the vehicle couldn't attack or block anymore, but the vehicle could attack or block, and the vehicle's power was equal to the power, the combined power of all the creatures that were on the vehicle. But then also, if you ever, like, a lightning bolt killed the creature in the middle of combat, the vehicle would just not be there. And we also played with rules where if you killed the vehicle, all the creatures inside of it died.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense in a dark way.
There were a lot of things we tried that made sense. And because vehicles are so resonant and people have associations with vehicles, they have all these expectations. We tried everything, and you know, some things were more resonant or made more sense. Like, yeah, if the car crashes, the creatures inside it aren't going to be doing that well. But ultimately, that just wasn't that fun. It was so much of a risk to put your creatures in the vehicle that one kill spell could blow them all up. But we didn't end up going that way. It was just too much tension. It made you too nervous while you were playing vehicles. It wasn't fun.
It's like driving in Europe on the wrong side of the road. And you're like, oh, should I be doing this? Oh, how's my insurance? Speaking of cool things that are happening in Kaladesh, energy is something else that's really, really neat. And something that I've noticed over a few sets when you have something like Morph or Emerge, for example, it kind of is a way to use mana in a way, I say mana in quotation marks, even if you don't have any. Is like worrying about making the game still playable and nice, even if you're a little bit mana screwed, something that you guys think about when designing mechanics potentially?
Yeah, it is. I mean, often what we think about there is having enough card flow in the set. So one really good example, I think, of that is moving towards Scry showing up more and just being more a part of the game. Because every time you Scry, you're sort of getting to make that decision of whether you need land or whether you need spells. And moving the game more towards games where both players have lands and both players are casting spells is something we are looking out for a lot.
Magic inherently is sort of like a finite design space. How do you find new space to work within the limitations of the game itself?
A lot of just exploration, meeting, brainstorming, talking about. Often it comes from a creative seed of something, trying to figure out what we're trying to represent on cards and then brainstorming what the best way to do that is and just talking about, yeah, what have we done? Where have we pushed the boundaries? What ideas do people have that they've been, you know, sitting on for a while that might be a good fit for what we're doing now? A lot of that happened in Kaladesh because we had Origins giving us a starting point for what Kaladesh was. So we were very much driven by the creative and the story and the concepts first and trying to design mechanics that fit to that, whereas sometimes it goes in the other order. If we don't know what the world is as much when we're starting design, it can go in either order. In the case of Kaladesh, it was really, we know what the world is, we know about energy, we know about airships, we know about all these things, and so it was a great jumping off point to, you know, start along the road of finding that new mechanical space.
Do you have several things sitting under your hat that you're crossing your fingers will be used in the future?
I have a few. I've led quite a few projects so far at Wizards, and I'm leading more all the time. So, I mean, there's some things that I'm still sitting on, and then there's other things that I was and are now in sets that I'm finished working on but haven't been released yet. So, yeah, there's stuff that I have left, and there's also stuff that just that I've already put in files but isn't in the public yet. I mean, we work so far in advance.
That's got to be weird and feel like a little bit of a time traveler talking about something you worked on like 2 years ago.
It does feel weird. I think it was probably around or over 2 years ago that I joined the Kaladesh design team. For example, I also led Conspiracy Take the Crown, and that set came out a few weeks ago. The last time I worked on it was 18 months ago or something, so seeing the set come out, remembering all the cards that are in it, remembering drafting it, and then Kaladesh coming out and having those same sort of experiences of like, wow, I've worked on so many products, so many sets, had so many ideas, gone through so many iterations on completely unrelated things since I stopped working on Kaladesh that, yeah, it feels surreal. It's fun because I kind of get to experience everything twice.
I played Conspiracy Take the Crown, and it was great. What's your favorite thing to draft in Conspiracy 2?
I really like the Monarch mechanic. I like building decks that can take the crown a lot and hold it and kind of defend and draw cards in that way. I don't mind having a target. I like when people are trying to get it from me. And I just like what having the Monarch, the crown in the game does to what people are doing. I really like the uncommon conspiracies. There's one that pairs two creatures together. When you cast one, you get the other. And there's a one that echoes your spells, where when you cast a spell on the creature you named, you get to copy the spell. I like both of those cards a lot. They let you build these really weird combo decks, which is kind of what I like to do.
So you used to be a pro player. What was it like to transition from that life to working inside R&D?
My transition, I think, wasn't as much of a transition as it is for some of the people who are pro players who come on, because I also worked as a game designer in a game studio for many years while I was playing on the Pro Tour and GPs and all the pro circuits. So for me, it was still giving up that competitive Magic life, which all of us have had to go through. But it wasn't so much adding as taking the thing I was already doing, making games, and just getting to make, you know, a different game, and in many ways getting to make the game I wanted to make.
What do you wish people knew about your job and what you have to do that they don't?
Something that I really try to say anytime I have a mic or an audience is just that the development is a lot more than changing numbers and working out, you know, a perfectly balanced standard environment or making sure that Limited is balanced for the Pro Tour and things like that. We really are just at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day trying to make sure that the sets are fun and that they're fun for lots of people and lots of different types of players. And I don't like having the reputation of this like cutthroat competitive person who's just like spends their day trying to figure out if a card should have 4 or 5 toughness. It's a lot more, I don't ask that question nearly as much as I'm trying to ask the question and answer the question of, is this stuff fun?
So my favorite question to ask future League people is, do you have any good stories of decks that you thought would happen and just never ended up happening?
So my answer is a little bit different. I do have some of those, but the deck that I had was when I first started at Wizards, we were just wrapping up Theros. And a few of the gods had different text than they ended up getting printed with. And in my first or second week, I built a standard deck that Drew could consistently draw its whole deck and attack for like 200 damage on turn 4 or 5. And I was just playing this deck and you know, crushing people. And our senior director, Aaron Forsyth, walked by and looked down and he was like, I don't even think if I met him at that point. He was like, what are you doing?
You're just like winning every game ever. Isn't this what I'm supposed to do?
Yeah, I was like, well, I think we're going to change these cards.
Oh, that's awesome.
So my name's Mel, and I'm on the story team, and I'm also on this new team that Magic has, and it's for focusing on social play between players and just like game expressions of how to do that.
So you have a very interesting background in life. You didn't start out as somebody doing story and that sort of thing in Magic. Can you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, that's kind of like my little secret. Yeah, I was actually, oh my gosh, I'm still kind of like amazed that I'm here. And like, I don't know, sometimes it's really hard for me to remember that I'm an employee and not a fan. So before I got here, I was working as an engineer on medical devices, but I was also really into cosplay and I really love Magic's lore. So I think like the big moment when I first started meeting Wizards people was at the Cons of Tarkir premiere. I'd been cosplaying Magic for a while, and then that one I showed up as Sarkhan and people seemed to like it. And
I remember, it was awesome.
Thank you so much. But yeah, it was just like, I don't know, cosplay is so exciting to me because like I have all these feels as a fan, and it's like it's really cool to feel like you're like making part of the story yourself as a fan. And I think especially like Magic's community is awesome. Like we're all creators in a big way. Like we all make different decks that are like trying to express who we are. And so for me, like cosplay and writing are really like kind of natural extensions of that.
How did you find yourself working at Wizards then, having worked in such a seemingly completely opposite field?
Actually, to be totally honest, I never thought this would work out. And so
that's how I wake up every morning, every day.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like even right now, I'm like, is this real life? Am I really here?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I was actually, I was midway through applying for like engineering desk jobs. And just like on a whim, I applied to Wizards, actually for a different position. And they were like, oh yeah, so we're not sure if that one's going to work out, but like, what do you really want to do? And I was like, oh man, let me tell you about my dream. It's to, you know, work on stories for Magic the Gathering. And I was like, oh, this is never going to happen. Like, I have a weird background. And they were like, okay, well, you know, they sent me a writing test. I sent in my writing sample. And they were like, wow, yeah, you know, we really like you. And I was like, really? I've been working there. The social gaming thing is kind of a new focus that Wizards has had recently. And I'm so excited that that's, you know, an actual formal team now, because that's what really excites me about playing Magic.
So Magic Story, Kaladesh, it's happening. I've noticed it's pretty intricate. You guys go pretty deep on developing the world of Kaladesh and everything that exists within it. What's hiding in Kaladesh that maybe we won't know if we're just players and we're just playing the game of the cards? What cool stuff is hidden in the design of the world?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm actually not sure how to answer that because we haven't like released everything yet. And I'm like, oh my God, what if I leak something right now?
Okay, I'll give you a moment.
Actually, one of the first projects that I worked on were what are some of the inventor societies in Kaladesh? So some of them are referred to sort of like in the card name, and you get like these little glimmers of what they're like. So we have like, oh gosh. So for example, there's one of the inventor societies called the Countless Gears, and they work on these really tiny, tiny, intricate devices. So they're really into making like the smallest, most compact version of whatever's already out there. There's also the Derby Crows. And so the Derby Crows are these, it's the society of racers. And so, you know, you'll always find them hanging out over at the Oval Chase, just like racing around and trying to beat their best times. There's the Metal Spinners. And these are like kind of Burning Man type people who really like making these artistic kinetic sculptures. And, you know, they're really into just the act of creation and like making art. It's all functional art, but, you know, it's really just to express themselves more than it is to like make something functional per se.
Sure. Is that, what's the most fun part for you about designing a world?
Oh gosh. I think it's the act of working with an entire team where you start out with this idea and you're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, there was with Kaladesh, it's like, wouldn't it be cool if there was a society that was associated with like making constructs that like looked and acted like animals? And then so you'll talk about that with some of your story team members and they'll be like, oh yeah, like what if they were elves? And like, you know, what if they spend most of their time like observing animals in this one region of the city? And so the overall effect is like you start with an idea and then people run with it. And then at the end of it, your entire team has come out with this really realistic like rendering and, you know, mechanical expression of what this like little glimmer of an idea you had was. was, and just like watching your and your teammates' ideas just come to life is so exciting. It's really cool.
Being a lady working in magic, how important is it to you to like think about ideas of representation in the worlds that you design?
Yeah, it's really important to me. So I think one of the characters that's like the most near and dear to my heart is Tamiyo. And like, so like personally, I came from a science and engineering background. And I remember like one of the things that really got me into grad school was there's this guy named Larry Summers, and he was the dean of Harvard at the time. And he made this big speech about how women had like, you know, 50 years or something, and they're just not good at science. And so women should just stop being scientists. And that was actually one of the things that motivated me to go get my PhD in engineering. So, I mean, I'm kind of a contrarian like that, but I mean, I love seeing examples of women doing awesome things. And I know that, like, for me personally, like, magic has a big effect on me that way. I grew up with awesome magic card female role models like Benilish Hiro and Aisha Tanaka. So those are like old school cards that I'm not sure if everybody remembers, but gosh, I really remember them. Like, and seeing a lot of the female artists in magic back in the early 90s when, like, you know, that just wasn't a thing for a lot of female artists. Like, most fantasy artists are these white dudes. And it was really cool to see a lot of, like, women and people from, like, various racial backgrounds working on magic. And I really think that's an important, like, core quality of what magic is. And I really want to preserve that. So with characters like Tamiyo, we have a female who is a heroic scientist. And in a game about fighting, you don't always get to talk about somebody who's not a fighting type. And she's very powerful, but that's not something that she feels like she has to, you know, kill other people using. Like, she's primarily somebody who studies the world around her and is observant and cares about other people. And that's powerful. And I think that oftentimes we think of being powerful as just being somebody who's, like, physically big and tough, but I think that's expressed in a lot of different ways, and so it's really cool for me that magic gets it a lot of those different types of power.
How does your life as a cosplayer help you be better at your job?
So I think cosplay is a really cool and unique way that fans can get involved with fantasy properties. So when I was outside of the building, the really attractive part to me is like, so when I cosplay, I often do like crossplays. So there'll be a character who's originally male, and I'll do a female representation of it. And like part of the joy in that is like, I guess like not only like blurring the lines between gender, which is something that I just personally advocate, but also like the idea of getting to participate in your, you know, the fantasy world that you see. So just like I was saying earlier, like it's exciting to be in a group and see your ideas come to life. Similarly with cosplay, it's like, oh, well, I see this character in cards or whatever, but I really want it to be real. Like I want to see the dragon head. I want to see the fire. And so, like, making fantasy real is something that's really exciting and near and dear to my heart.
What are you most excited for people to experience on Kaladesh?
I think the cool thing about Kaladesh is really, like, its core theme. It's the joy of invention. And I think magic is really involved in that in a lot of ways. Like, whenever you build a deck, you're inventing something. Magic players also love customizing stuff, like making custom deck boxes or, you know, like, making your own playmat. So there's a lot of ways to which, like, magic tries to suit the way that you personally feel. And I think that Kaladesh really expresses that as well. Like, Kaladesh as a plane encourages everyone there to invent their tomorrow and, you know, envision what they want the world around them to be like and go enact that.
Is there anything I didn't ask you you wanted to touch on?
I love watching you and Megan.
Yay!
So, yeah, just geek out moment. You guys are awesome, and I'm super excited to see you both on coverage. Like, you had asked me earlier about, like, as a lady in MTG, how do you feel? And, I mean, I also want to ask you that question because, I mean, I think it's so exciting to see you two, like, on articles and on coverage and just representing our community. Like, that just makes me so proud. I'm really happy you guys are here.
We're happy too. And like, I'm like, have the microphone in my face now. But like, seriously, it's tough out there in a world of the internet / Reddit. to exist and do what we do. And sometimes it can get you down and it can hit you pretty hard. But you just got to like get up and be like, you know what? This isn't for today. It's for tomorrow. And
yeah. And I have to say, too, like, actually, the Magic community impresses me a lot. Like, Magic has this very unique quality to its gameplay where, like, you got to, like, look somebody in the eye. And, like, it's really hard. It's a lot harder for people to be hatey when they have to actually talk to somebody. And it's, like, it's really interesting to me, like, how different playing Magic face-to-face with somebody is versus, like, some online interaction. And I've been in some online communities that are just really toxic. And, yeah, I think it's just really healthy and good to, you know, if you want to say something to somebody, talk to them. And, you know, a lot of times I think that people who tend to be trolly, like, don't really understand the way it makes somebody else feel. And when you're face-to-face with somebody and they, you know, tell you about that, it's a much different experience than just, like, yelling into the void and, like, yelling mean things at people. Like, realizing that people are human and, you know, they're flesh and blood and they can sit across from you and play cards with you is way different than just, like, yelling at some rando on the internet.
My name is Kimberly Krynas, and I am a creative designer on the story team at Wizards. And what that entails is everything that you see on the card that's not the rules text, basically. So we do the flavor text and the naming. We do, you know, the art descriptions that we then send to the artist to concept the card. And then, as my favorite part of the job is, we get to do the stories that go along with the sets, each of the sets.
So when you're working on a set like Kaladesh, do you kind of start concepting? Is the story or the concept born with you guys?
Yeah, so Kaladesh, a lot of the worlds start out, you know, they start as a seed, and then we have our world building team, or the story and world building team, and so we'll all sort of get together and big room. No idea is a bad idea at first. You just start throwing everything at the board, literally, like everybody. And it's the only thing you think about. Like, you go home at night and it's like in your head and it's all, you know, I have dreams about the worlds that we're building. I'm not even kidding. So like, yeah. So you're like, okay, we're building an adventures world, and everybody goes home and you come back the next day and then you all brainstorm and you're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if this, or if like the Aetherborn came out of the process of refining aether, like, oh yeah. And then you build on that. So like, so then you do the world building, and like, as you go, we refine it down and we say, okay, we need something for white. We need something for green. We, you know, so like the more days we meet, the more granular we get and the more nuanced. But it starts off as this huge sandbox that's just really fun to play in.
And so where did Kaladesh itself come from? How was that inspired?
So Kaladesh, well, initially Kaladesh, we caught a glimpse of it in Origins, and we knew that we were going to go there. So we had to do our due diligence in Origins, because we didn't have time to world build this whole world because we were working on the Origins set. So, but we knew little bits and pieces of it. And so then we knew we wanted it to be, once design and development had settled on, yes, this is going to be a vehicle world, and yes, this is going to be something with energy. And then so we're like, okay, so how are we going to make that come alive? Steampunk caught our eye. That was the basic seed. But we didn't want that gritty pollution feel that comes along with steampunk, and we wanted to be Magic's take on steampunk, and so what better thing than a mystical energy source that doesn't make pollution? So now it's Aetherpunk world, and after that we found inspiration in the setting of India, just the beauty there, the colors, the everything. It just came alive, and it's such a contrast to where we had been with the Eldrazi and on Innistrad, and we wanted something bright and optimistic, and it's just one out of the other sort of came out of that.
Is there a particular reason you thought you wanted something that differed so wildly from Innistrad coming up after it? Is it kind of because you haven't really explored a world where everything has the mood of bright optimism, or were you just like, this is kind of what the world needs right now?
Well, so it's a little bit of both, right? So the pendulum swing, often if you hear Jeremy Jarvis, we'll often talk about the swinging of the pendulum, and we knew that we had two worlds of Eldrazi, and that's a lot of tentacles, man. Like, that's just more tentacles than most people.
So many.
So many tentacles. And so, so we were thinking, we're going to need something that it's not just not tentacles, but it's brighter. And that's actually where a lot of the challenges for this block came out of, was making an optimistic world. It's definitely more brighter and more optimistic and less magic involved than any other setting. Like, you know, we don't have a lot of mages casting spells here. Everything is coming out of the inventions. So we had to look at the world building through a totally different lens this time. So it was cool and it was challenging.
So tell me a little bit about Saheeli Rai. I mean, obviously, she's thebomb.com. She's great. How did she come to be?
So Saheeli, she basically represents the feel of Kaladesh. Like, we wanted somebody, a planeswalker, to capture, like, that spirit. She's the spirit of innovation. We often talk of her as the luminary. So, like, that feeling you sort of get when you're all excited, like you're about to do some big, you know, big project, something you've been working on. Like, we wanted people to look at her and feel that. Like, she's so proud of everything she is. And she's like the epitome of what it means to be an inventor on this plane. Like, she is living the life. And she's talented. She's smart. Like, she's so smart. And she's worldly. She's, you know, multiversal worldly. Like, so, yeah. So she basically, she embodies all of the great things that we see about Kaladesh. And yeah, so she came out of all the happy places.
So for you, is there anything in this set that you are personally really proud of or really excited for people to experience?
Gremlins.
Yes! My gremlin sister!
Yeah, so they were. We each sort of divided up the races when it was time to do writing, and I wanted the gremlins, and they're not the sapient race here, but they just intrigued me so much because they're these cute little guys. But okay, so my background on them was before the cities came, before like ether was pumped in, these gremlins had adapted to this world. They fed on aether, so they have these huge claws that you'll see. Their snouts exude this like caustic saliva that, like, so before aether was refined, it was in these geodes sometimes. So when the aether swells dip down into the land, it like forms these geodes and they're buried in. So gremlins were sort of evolved in order to dig out these geodes and get at the geodes. So then all of those aspects of hunting down aether in the wild now have made them really good at causing destruction in the city, because their saliva also, you know, eats away at all the inventions, and their big claws scratch at everything.
So they're part raccoon, part alien from the movie Alien. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, exactly. Perfect. You nailed it.
I want to ask you a little bit about just keeping in mind, like, representation and female players. Like, we've seen a couple new female planeswalkers and everything recently. And how important that is that to you, and how, like, front of your mind is that?
It's super important to me. And honestly, like, yeah, front of my mind all the time. I love, as a woman, seeing myself in these characters. I grew up playing Magic, and you didn't always see yourself in the characters. And so to have not only one, there's not a token woman character anymore. It's like I have a whole plethora, a lineup that I can choose from. Who do I most relate to? And I hope that our female female players feel the same way as I do. And, you know, I hope we're doing a good job, and we keep trying every iteration, pushing harder. And it means it's not only me. It's like the whole team, everybody. It's on the front of everybody's mind, representation in general.
Okay, going back to gremlins for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Are they sentient or are they like animals?
They're closer on the animal. Yeah, they're. You wouldn't necessarily have them as pets. They're definitely considered pests in the city. But you know, they have their own little animal culture, of course.
Okay. Could I tame one and keep it in my house and sleep with it and have it be my best friend forever?
Yes. Duh.
Okay. Perfect. When it comes to magic art, are you involved in that world at all?
Yeah, so for the art world, it's crazy. So we have the cards come in. We know how many cards we want to make. On the story team, we write the concept for each of the art. So like we take the mechanics and we figure out how are we going to represent that in a piece of art. And then we ship that off to our art team, who then chooses the artist and figures out how, you know, like where they're going to send it. And then you get the art that comes back for that. So it's crazy, and it just blows my mind to see everything that's in our heads during this world building, because it's just in our heads and like words on paper that would mean nothing to anybody. And then to come back and see it come alive, it's one of the most amazing things. It really is. Artists, they're so talented. I wish I could draw. I can draw stick figures. That's about it.
What's it like for you? How does it feel, I suppose, when somebody plays a set for the first time and it's like, oh, I love this world. What does that feel like?
It's like your birthday and Christmas and everything combined. Like, to see the way people are getting excited about Kaladesh, this was the first world that I was on the world building team when I started. And it's so hard, by the way, to like not talk about it to like everybody that you ever see. But like, to see the way people's faces light up and that people are excited about Gremlins and people are excited about just like the bright world and the optimist. And we, you know, like, it is, it's like we were part of making this. It's awesome. And to share it with people, it's not to just watch. It's like, I want to play with you. I want to like get in this with you. And that's really cool. Yeah.
I have to tell you that I just want to say thank you for all of the work you do at Wizards, and also for giving my Hungry Spriggan deck a perfect score in the Community Cup last year. Thank you.
Oh, obviously.
So my name is Jeremy Jarvis. I am principal designer for Magic, Worlds, and IP. What that means is I am ultimately responsible for the results of the world building and how we grow as an IP. That can be character introduction or, again, what the worlds are. So I spent most of my career as an art director. My background's in freelance illustration. And then I was the art director for Magic for 7 years solo. From Lorwyn to M15, I commissioned every single illustration and was responsible for the look of every single world. So now we have other fantastic art directors that you probably recognize from card bylines, which are Cynthia Shepherd, Mark Winters, and Dawn Murin. And so they do the commissioning and art directing now, and I do kind of vision and strategy stuff.
So you used to be an artist as well. You did some art on some cards as well.
I did, yeah.
Do you have any particular favorites over the years?
That I did?
Yeah.
Rakdos Guild Mage still holds up. That might be my favorite.
In your new role, how much of it is still kind of that kind of blue sky overarching, like, view of what the world is going to look like and what everything inside is going to look like as well?
So a good deal of it. Like, right now, this is nothing I can go into detail about, but we are in ARC planning for years out at the very, very blue sky, where it is, you know, a combination of Aaron Forsyth, Rosewater, myself, Doug Beyer, Jenna Helland, and we're kind of setting the vision for, like, what worlds do we want to go to? What stories do we want to tell? What characters do we want to introduce? And then kind of once that takes shape out of blue sky, then other people start to activate, and the teams start to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then start building those worlds and sets in earnest.
So how do you start building a world? Where do you start from? Is somebody just throw, do you just throw out ideas, and or do you have a kind of a plan from on high and you're like, oh, well, we should explore this kind of universe?
So it's both, actually. Like, we have, hilariously, we're talking about Kaladesh right now a lot, and there's an inventor's fair. We had a world's fair where everyone's invited from R&D and beyond to be like, what would excite you? Like, as a person working at Wizards, working on Magic, who's clearly passionate about the game, what do we want to see? And then we take all of those and kind of look at what we think is the most promising. Of course, Mark has feedback from his social media about what that subsection of players are very excited to see. Like, for example, we knew that people wanted an Egypt world, and so we have now announced Amenket. Like, we're finally doing that. So there is sometimes a mechanical driver, kind of what we call bottom-up. Like, Innistrad, it was top-down. Like, we want to do Magic Does Gothic Horror, right? It's a known genre. It's a known trope space. And so that creative genre drove the card design. Zendikar started as Land Matters. And it's like, what the hell does that mean? Like, land always matters in Magic. And it's like, no, it's land matters. We don't know what it looks like or where it is. Go figure it out.
And wow, so, that's so just kind of opaque. What do you do with that?
It was tough. From land matters, we kind of got to, okay, so maybe it's about exploration, and land matters here more than normal because there's this kind of wild mana happening. And that's where the royal came from. And that's where it's like, oh, the plane itself is allergic to something trapped on it. That led to the Eldrazi, and that kind of adventuring and treachery based on the royal led to the kind of almost D&D party of allies. And so, you know, we work back and forth and back and forth with design and development all the way through to the concept push. Even so, most of the assets for our world guide come from a three-week explosion where we bring five artists in for 3 weeks, and we just generate lots and lots of stuff. And sometimes even at that, and that's fairly late stage, like we don't bring them in to just be like, I don't know, draw anything. Like we know what we want to some extent. But, you know, Vincent Prose for Shadows Over Innistrad drew two angels stuck together. Ken Nagel saw it. And that's where Meld came from. And
so, what? So that's where... So Meld wasn't... It was from the art.
It was from the art. Now, Nagel had been wanting a mechanic similar to that all the way back to New Phyrexia. But it just never was quite right. But that piece of art pushed it over the top. And Nagel was like, now's the time. Let's do this thing.
And that art is fantastic. I love it.
It is good. It is really good.
Maybe I'm biased because in my pre-release pool, I had two Gisela and a Bruna. So it was pretty busted.
What are you most excited for people to experience in Kaladesh?
The entire setting. Like, honestly, there is nothing that looks like Kaladesh. Like, and it's really fun to play in known trope spaces, right? Like Innistrad, Gothic horror, and just when we're looking at those sorts of things, like, eventually you'll see Amonkhet. I was skeptical at the beginning of that because it's like, Egypt's kind of been done to death. Like, everybody knows Egypt. But I was looking online. I was like, no one's done this super well. Like, all of this is kind of garbagey. Like, I'm not a fan. We can do this better. We can do it better. So that's rewarding in its own right. But then when there is the opportunity to just make something that is fresh and that no one knows they wanted, and then they see it, like, if I just walked up to you on the street and was like, hey, you like steampunk? How about there's no steam and it's etherpunk? And also it kind of looks like India, but it's not real India. It's, you know, and none of the colonialism stuff, we're not doing that. How does that sound? It'd be like, Jeremy, that is a weird sentence. Like, what are you talking about? But if I can just show you Kaladesh, like, I am so excited for people to see this new thing that we worked really hard on and really care about a lot. The Western fantasy trope space has not been embracing of, you know, that part of the world. And to just really try to blow that out and celebrate it and just enjoy the color and the shape and the people and you know, the optimistic tone, which is also kind of unusual for Magic. You know, at the end of the day, it's a game about fighting, but we get to craft narratives around what each particular set and setting is about. And so it feels really fresh and new, and it looks great, and that's what I'm excited about.
Hearing the Kaladesh announcement, I found myself more excited for this set than I have been for any since I started playing 4 years ago. And I think a lot of it has to do with the optimism and the fact that it's just... I mean, you can have gremlins crew a giant battleship. I mean, that's ridiculous, but it's so much fun. And I guess it feels kind of like a breath of fresh air after we've been, you know, struggling through the Eldrazi menace for so long, that sort of thing.
Right. Yep. And that was, you know, we played catch up through Battle for Zendikar. That's when the thinking, like, those sets were in flight as the thinking changed away from large set, small set, small set to, you know, the two-block model where we're going to do two places a year. And so that was in flight. Innistrad had started. And Kaladesh was our first opportunity to be like, okay, we get to really swing the pendulum. We get to decide what comes next. Because in that three-set model, we always had a core set that was kind of a palate cleanser, right? And then you go to the next place. But when they're juxtaposed back-to-back, you know, it's important. You know, we're asking people to come along with us to twice as many places through the course of a year. And to keep it fresh and exciting, you're going to see us very deliberately swing that pendulum from place to place.
So you lived in the art world, specifically in Magic, for a long time. What, in your opinion, makes a great piece of Magic art?
What makes a great piece of Magic art? So what I look for is the ability to portray character, to do the world justice, right? And to be somehow cinematic. We really this is hilarious for a card game, right? Like, we've got a, whatever, 2 1/4 inch by whatever, 1 3/4 inch art box on those cards. But we really try to be cinematic. Like, I do not consider our competition to be other card games. And I mean, in some ways they are. Like, we can talk about Hearthstone, we can whatever. But our competition, because we are competing for people's minutes, right? And so we're really competing with AAA video games and entertainment franchises, usually movie franchises. Like, those are the minutes that you are spending playing Magic. You could be doing other things. And so, you know, that is why we really try to look for people that can convey that sense of scope and scale and drama and even cinematic lighting. Because my first criteria for a world guide as to whether or not it's good is, like, would I be excited to watch this movie? If this were a movie, would I go see it?
Is it hard to tell a story when you're telling it through cards?
Yeah, it's really, really difficult. Like, a medium that is that is denied sequentiality, storytelling is really, really hard. So that is one of the reasons Kaladesh is introducing the story spotlight cards, to try to help give some structure and context. You know, you'll see the watermark, and then it literally says story spotlight, 2 of 5. And you're like, oh, something happened before, and a few more things will happen after. And then you can go directly to the fiction and read it. And of course, written prose, written fiction, does a much better job at telling a story. You know, so the card game itself, we're trying to better link to the written fiction and tell our story that way. So the card game acknowledges it and tries to get you to go read it.
So in current years, art direction has kind of changed gears a little bit into making everything sort of fit under the banner and look like it all comes from the same universe. And some people are still like, oh, I wish all the cards looked different and had their own unique individual flair like they did back in the old days. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so the thinking changed. And first of all, there is, just to give us credit that we don't always get, there is a pretty wide range of styles within Magic, like Therese to Raymond Swanlin, Chase Stone to Steve Belladin, Howard Lyon, like all of these people, like you can look at their work and know who did it. Early Magic, some of that charm, and I started playing with Revised. I remember that charm. I am not immune to it. But some of it came from the outliers visually, and I'm not meaning that quality-wise, but just stylistically being such outliers that they're actually kind of inappropriate. And so people do kind of yearn for that, you know, strong, inappropriate outlier visually, but that doesn't help us convince you of a world or, you know, give a character a particular look and relatability. And so we you know, kind of build a stylistic bridge between the edges, and so the edges feel more related than they actually are. I mean, if you put Chase Stone beside Therese Nielsen, that's a pretty wide difference. But we have all of these artists that stylistically build bridges to those styles so that no one is super jarring when you see their work. And that's, you know, that is one of the goals. Like, I want you to appreciate the world, love the characters, and jarring people stylistically doesn't help us do that.
It would be like you're watching a Disney movie and then all of a sudden there's a shot of The Shining in there.
literally. Like, you could take a set from the good old days and point to the Disney card and the Slasher card, right?
So how many revisions do cards go through art-wise in, I suppose, from the extreme to the usual?
So our goal, I can tell you what our goal is. Our goal is to front load the work for ourselves, like build that world guide correctly, write great art descriptions, get a good handoff from development so we're confident that the card's not going to change too much, pick the right artist, send it out, approve the sketch, approve the final, get them paid, right? That is our goal. Now, stumbles happen along the way. Sometimes it's just not quite what we were looking for. Sometimes the card changes out from under us and we have to kill the entire thing and just be like, I need to send you a whole new art description. That's just not going to work for what that card's doing anymore. But typically, a round of feedback or two, is where we top out. If it's more than that, something's going wrong. Either we're communicating poorly, or sometimes there's a language barrier. We're working with global talent. That can be a factor. And sometimes, you know, the file shifting around can be problematic. But our goal is to, we pride ourselves at trying to be a very, very good client. And that's because of the both myself and our art directors, two of the three come out of a background of freelance illustration. We know what it's like to be at the beck and call of a client. We know what it's like to try to do a good job. We know what it's like to need to be paid on time because we're freelancers. And so we try to be that client for our freelancers.
And sometimes you get some art of lemurs.
Yes. That was before my time, yes. That was, I have had a funny interaction where I signed up a new artist. This was years ago, and there was a language barrier. English was not his first language, which is fine. We don't care at all. Like, it's all about the work. But I send his first brief out, his first art descriptions, and I get this email back. And he's like, Jeremy, thank you for these commands, which is already charming and funny, right? Thank you for these new commands. And I have questions. And one of them was like, what does longsword mean? And I was like, oh, hell. Oh, I've stumbled into bad lighting. So.
Well, where do we start?
Yep.
My name is Mark Rosewater. I am the head designer for Magic the Gathering.
So, Mark, you're a busy man. You're all over social media. You do so much great work for Wizards. Mm-hmm. How do you do everything that you do? Are you a robot?
Clones. We make use of clone technology. The funny thing is, I have an amazing team at Wizards. I like, because I'm in the public eye, people sort of think I just do everything. And the answer is, I don't do everything. I just have a very talented team of people that work with me that, you know, do a lot of the stuff. And that most of my job, you know, in the office is doing big picture things. Is like, I don't even make cards as much anymore. You know what I'm saying? I every once in a while I get to design a card, but I don't do as much card design as I used to because I'm trying to do like big pictures. Like, what is Kaladesh? You know, trying to solve that problem. But I love it. I mean, like I said, this is 21 years into my job. It's a dream job. I love doing it. It is very easy to make a lot of material when you love what you do. So
21 years is a long time. How do you still keep yourself excited to go into the office in the morning and come up with new things every day?
Well, I mean, I love what I do. I mean, every year, for example, my kids are in middle school and I'll go do career day and I'll talk to career day. And the thing I always say at career day is, look, kids, you want to make your life as good as you can make it. Do something every day that you love to do. That you're going to have a job. You're going to have to somehow make a living. But if you love the thing you do, then life just becomes a lot happier because instead of like looking forward to when you're not working, you enjoy working. And I enjoy what I do. I mean, magic. How do I do magic for 21 years? It's not the same thing. It's not like I'm doing the same thing day in, day out. Every time I start a set, it's, how is this set different from every other set we've done? And I always start from a different vantage point. And like Kaladesh was a really different challenge. It's like, okay, we're doing, you know, steampunk or etherpunk, as we've been calling it. You know, how does we make that? It's an optimistic world. It's bright. It's an, you know, you're an inventor. What does that mean? And so I got to start that from a really different place. I've never ever said, feel like an inventor. What does that mean? And so this set, I got to do it from that point. And that's how I stay fresh. That's how I don't get bored is, look, it's a really challenging job. It's actually really hard, but it's fun. It's rewarding. And that I love magic. I mean, I owe a lot to magic. I mean, not only is magic my dream job, I met my wife at magic. It's taken me around the world. You know, magic has done wonderful things for me. And so I want to pay it back. I want magic to be as great as it can be. And hey, if that means, you know, doing all the social media, and I love doing it. I mean, that's the secret. The secret to being really, the secret to working hard at your job is enjoy everything you're doing. Then it's not really that much work, even though, I mean, it's work, but it's at least enjoyable work.
So what are you most excited for everybody to experience in Kaladesh?
I want them to play it. Like, one of the things I find interesting is this weekend, I'm seeing a lot of people experience it and see the cards and learn the mechanics. But the thing I'm most excited about isn't even that, you know. So my big metaphor, I've been talking this whole weekend. So if you listen to me on different podcasts this weekend, here's my metaphor of the weekend, is talking about design is a lot like cooking. And what I want to do is I want to make a dish that you taste the dish, you go, that is an awesome dish. And what I don't want you to do is go, like, are there eggs in that? Ooh, are there eggs? Like, yeah, I'll give you the recipe. I mean, I'll tell you the components of it, but the components aren't what matters. It's not like there's eggs in the dish and that's what matters. You know, hey, is there an artifact component to Kaladesh? Yeah, absolutely there is. You know, are there different things? Yeah, there is. But what I care about is when you taste the final thing, when you, you know, take a spoonful, I want to go, that's amazing. When you play the game, when you play Kaladesh, I just want you to go, oh, this is just awesome. This is an experience. Like, it's magic, but it's something new and different. And that's the trick. How do I make every magic set feel like magic? Because if it's too much not magic, then you're like, this isn't the game I love. So how do I make it enough magic, but enough not the thing you always know, that there's something new and different about it? And that's the challenge. And it's really, really hard to do, so it keeps me on my toes, and I don't get bored.
Yeah, and what you're talking about, I'm not a game designer or anywhere close to that, but when I think about magic, I think about a kind of a finite design space that you have to work within. You have constraints, which sometimes breeds creativity. Mm-hmm. How do you find yourself...
I've heard that, yes.
Yes. how do you find yourself finding new things and expanding and potentially expanding that design space, like Conspiracy 2, messing with the draft, with looking at your opponent's picks and that sort of thing, within magic, yet... finding new space within a closed system.
Well, I mean, I go back to my metaphor of cooking. It's sort of like, let's say I say to a chef, here are 30 ingredients. These 30 ingredients are, you use these ingredients all the time. That's all you get is these 30 ingredients. The chef will go, yeah, okay, I can make something. Like, just because we have known components, it's not that, like, it's a brand new thing. Like, a lot of what we do, it's not like magic does things that it can't do. I mean, every once in a while we do, you know, okay, double face cards or something. Every once in a while, but that's not normal magic. We only get to pull that rabbit out of the hat every once in a while. Most of the time it's like, okay, what are normal things we can do, but mix and match in a different way? Like, I'm a big believer that when you play the game, I want you to feel something. Well, what am I trying to make you feel? In Innistrad, I was trying to scare you. I wanted you to be really afraid. Well, okay, how do I do that? How do I make mechanics, you know? Okay, I'm going to make, like, the werewolf mechanics did a really good job of, here's a thing that's not that bad, but it's going to turn into something bad, and you're like, oh, I don't want to... And then, okay, you're afraid because this thing you know has potential to be dangerous, and you know it. That's a lot of fear, is making you afraid of things. Okay, so I do that. Kaladesh was a world of invention. I wanted you to feel like an inventor. Well, what did that mean exactly? Well, okay, what it meant is I wanted you to have ability to combine things in ways where you felt proud that you did something cool. That's what invention is. Hey, I combined A, B, and C, and I made something. Like, here's my goal. When you're playing Kaladesh, the following moment should happen where you do something, you're like, where's the camera? Is someone recording this? Like, I just did something awesome. Is anybody watching this? This is a neat thing. And that magic does that. Magic normally does that. That's an experience that you get. I'm just ramping it up. This is a set where, like, that moment of discovery is just higher than normal. There's just more things that, like, when you play, you're just like, oh, I can do neat things. Energy is a good example. It's just a mechanic that, like, it's a neat mechanic. And, like, it's one of those things, as we first explained to people, it's hard to wrap your brain around it because it's a new resource. And I can say to you it's a new resource, but, like, what does that mean? And what it means is you will have to think about it in ways that you don't normally think about resources. That normally when you play with mana, okay, you've gotten used to mana. Mana acts in a certain way and does a certain thing. And, like, okay, it's going to go away, but it's going to get refreshed each turn. And so just how you deal with it, there's a way you think about it. And so much so that you've shorthanded it. There's a lot of ways when you play that you've just, like, in fact, when beginners play, it's fun to watch beginners play because they haven't learned to shorthand things. And you realize by watching beginners how much people internalize because they didn't know it at one point, you know? And so energy is that same sense. So it's going to be a fun learning curve where you're like, okay, what does this mean? What, you're like, you know, and I talk about lenticular design. That one of the things I like is I want a design to be as deep as you're capable of handling, but if you, I don't want to confuse you. I don't want a mechanic that if you're a player that can't handle it, you go, oh, wow, I'm just disoriented. Oh, my, this is, you know. I want to make something where you can handle it whatever level you're at, but if you're a really good player and you can handle more, there's more there. Energy is exactly like that. Like, energy is, I'm going to give you these counters, and you can spend them however you want. For a low-level player, just spend them. Like, you don't have to think about it. Just, you want to do that, you know. But for a high-level player, knowing when and where and how to use them, and, like, one of the real high-level plays is going, what's my route to victory? And not just what do I have in hand or on the battlefield. What's in my deck is, like, the correct answer to wait for something I haven't even seen yet because that's the route to my victory, you know. And that energy is a perfect example where it does something neat. And the basics of it, like, it's not super far from mana. Like, I get it, I spend it. Okay, mana does that. But the nuance of how it works, there's just enough little different things about it that, like, I always say that you don't have to change much to change everything. And that energy just changes just enough about mana that, like, oh, it's different. You know, and things that you've shorthanded that you're like, oh, I know exactly how to do this. You're like, oh, I can't do that. And there's just like a neat moment that people will have when they first start playing. The first time you have energy and you just have two things to do, and you're like, oh, well, okay, I how do I want to spend this? Is it better to give this guy a +1/+1 counter? Or, oh, do I want to mill my opponent? What do I want to do? You know? So that's the neat thing, is that the fun for me of making a new environment is I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't want to, like, if I made Magic, I could stretch Magic so far that you wouldn't even recognize the game of Magic. But that wouldn't make anybody happy. What I really want to do, and this is the nuance, the elegance of the design, is find little things that you understand, but the nuance of what it means takes a while to grok. And energy to me is squarely in that space. It's not hard to understand it. I will give you energy, you can spend energy. That's not super complicated on the, like, it's not hard to understand what that means, but understanding the ramifications is pretty big. And so they, like, in chess, they talk about, like, a minute to learn, you know, a minute to learn, a lifetime to master. That's kind of what I like to do, is find things where I introduce it to you, you understand it, but then there's all this exploration, because Magic is a game about exploration at its core. And so I want to do a world, set it, make you feel a certain way, let you explore certain things, and just figure out what exactly that world is doing that's different from other worlds. And that's why am I not bored 21 years in? Because each world gets to be different. That Kaladesh is nothing like Shadows of Innistrad, which was nothing like Battle for Zendikar, which was nothing like Khanja Tarkir. That each world I get to do, it's completely different.
How do you make sure that a set, I don't know what goes into it design-wise, to make sure that a set plays well over its lifespan?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things. So the way our system works is I start at the very beginning of the process, the blank page. There is nothing. I my job is to make something out of nothing. You know what I'm saying? I work, very talented team I work with. When I talk about things I do, it's in conjunction with lots of other people that work very hard, that are really good at their job. So this is a team effort. Magic is not a solo effort. So as I talk about that, I'm interacting with lots and lots of people. I mean, that's important. So what happens is I start with a blank page. I and my team, we're interacting with the creative team and, you know, understand the story and stuff. And then what happens is we slowly ramp up and build a world. And then at some point I hand the baton to the next team, the development team. And it's a continual process. The development team is just literally starting where we stopped and continuing on. But my end of the spectrum is more about there's nothing, make something. And I look very top end. Like, I'm like, what emotion are you trying to feel? What things make you feel that way? And then on the other end, on Eric's side, Eric Lauer's the head developer, that's where he gets the fine-tuning of it. Okay, I get what the vision is that Mark set, but how do we make sure that when people actually play it, it does that? Like, a story I always tell is, I made vampires in Innistrad. I wanted them to be red-black. I wanted them to be more aggro. You know, I wanted to sort of push vampires in a slightly different direction than they had been. But what I turned over, the correct way to play them wasn't to do the thing that I wanted. And what Eric said is, oh, I see his vision. This is what Mark wants. Let me make some changes so that in actual gameplay, that's what happens. Because when my designers play test, we're not worried about the optimization. We're just like, what's fun? Because a lot of players like, what's fun? But there are players out there who very much are the, you know, the voice of the community, that are very good players, and that if the right thing to do, you know, it's not the fun thing, but it's the right thing to do, then they'll do that. And our job is to make sure that the fun thing is the right thing to do. So Eric's job and his team is making sure that we take the vision that I have, but make sure it's executed correctly. And then they have to balance things. I mean, there's a lot, there's a whole ecosystem and standard and draft, and, you know, there's a lot of balancing that comes there. Like, I don't set power and stuff, that they do that. But essentially, it's a long process where I and my team do the first half of it, and then we hand off and they do the second half of it. And it plays to our skills. You wouldn't want to rely on me balancing things, but, you know, I'm not sure Eric's the one to take a blank piece of paper. You know, that we have different skills, and, you know, I think I'm very, very good at my end of the portion, and that, and it's fun. I like, a lot of people are afraid of the blank page. I love the blank page. Like, I love the challenge of, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? And my attitude is, there's a way to do it. Let's figure out how to do it. There's a way to do it. We got to figure out how to do it.
Gremlins. I love them. Are you responsible?
No. The creative, you have to thank the creative team for that. I think what happened was, one of the things we always do when we make a set is, one of the things I ask the creative team is, I say, take each of the colors and explain to me, in this world, how is that color expressed? Okay, we're in a world of invention, you know, how exactly? And part of red, for example, was, there's a lot of creativity. You mash blue and red together, you sort of get creativity. But red also has a destructive component. And we're like, well, okay, even in this world of invention, there has to be some destructive component. And so the idea we liked a lot was, it was a more natural thing, that like, there's these creatures that just eat ether. Well, that's kind of bad if you're, you know, if your inventions run on ether. Well, something that eats ether is a problem. And they came up with it. I mean, we had done gremlins long, long ago in the early, early days of Magic. And we had never really done them, I think, to satisfaction. They were kind of, you know, something that we have a list of things that are sort of like, kind of like, eh, Magic's never really done this as well as it could be. And Gremlin was on that list. And I just think they thought like, oh, we need something kind of destructive in red that kind of releases the ether back into the ether sphere. Oh, this is kind of cool. How about gremlins?
I'm so excited to crew my ship with a bunch of gremlins, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, one of the fun things about vehicles in general is, like, we want things to logically make sense. But one of the funs of Magic is the illogical things happen, and there's fun in that. And so it is great fun just taking some, you know, giant beast or something, you know, and like, my beast is riding my car, you know. There's something fun about that, that it's just, I don't know, I want to make sure that all our things make sense flavorfully, but I love that you can mix and match it, and that, you know, your Loxodon can wear the boots that clearly they can't fit them, but it's okay, you know, your elephant gets to wear boots. And that's kind of fun. I like that exists. So one of the fun moments for those that like crazy things is, it is possible for a vehicle to crew a vehicle. So, like, let's say you're trying to get a big thing to go. You can use your smaller thing to crew a smaller vehicle so it's big enough so it can crew it. And we actually thought about, should we stop that? Because it makes no flavor sense. But mechanically, it was a lot of fun. And it actually was a neat mechanical thing. And what we said is, okay, we'll set it up so you don't do that very often. It's a rare thing you would do it. But you know what? It's just a lot of words to stop you. And okay, like every once in a blue moon, if you get in the car and the car gets in the giant skyship, like that's kind of entertaining. So we left it. We let it be.
Yeah, I like it. So you on your Twitter, you often have head-to-head battles of various things
every
that
day.
People can vote on.
Every weekday.
Every weekday. I have one for you.
Okay.
All right. Thor versus Nicol Bolas.
Thor versus Nicol Bolas. Wow. I mean, Thor's the better fighter, but Nicol Bolas is clearly the better at plotting. So Thor's main villain is Loki, who is a good plotter. And so Loki often gets the better of Thor. So I feel like if it's a fight in which you just throw them in an arena, yeah, Thor's going to win. But like if Nicol Bolas could plan, yeah, Nicol Bolas is winning that.
In your opinion, what is the cutest card in all of Magic?
The cutest card in all of Magic. That's an interesting question. So one of my favorite things is the card Illusions of Grandeur. I think a lot of people miss what's going on. And what's going on is there's a little tiny bunny that the wizard is casting illusion to make it look like a dragon. But it's this little tiny bunny. And most people miss that's what the card is showing. Like they just see the dragon, they go whatever. And they miss the bunny. The bunny's so cute. So that's one of my favorites.
All right, I'll have one final question for you. Just because we got to wrap up, but what overall in your career are you most proud of?
Wow, that's hard. I mean, a lot of times it's kind of like, you know, of your kids, which one do you like the best of your kids? You had to pick a kid, which is the best kid. I'm proud of a lot of things. I mean, here's the thing I guess I'm proudest of is I think Magic is an amazing game. I think it's the best game ever made. It's my pick. It's just, you know, it's an amazing thing. And the fact that I've been able to have such a large handprint on it, the fact that I've been able to influence something that matters so much to me, that I care so much about, that really, like, I know when I die, Magic's going to outlive me. I have no doubt about that. And that it's going on to do great things. And the fact that in the history books of Magic, that I get to be there, that I get to be one of the people that really contributed and sort of helped make Magic what it was. That I feel like, you know, if I get something on my tombstone, the fact that really I contributed in a way that meant something and that will have an influence beyond me being gone, that's kind of cool.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I want to thank all of you guys for being listeners of MTA Cast and supporting the show so much, either financially through word of mouth or just by going around and being awesome people. You're all the best. Hopefully, I will be able to bring you more interviews with players and members of Wizards, R&D creative team, who knows who. Maybe Nicol Bolas himself in upcoming episodes. All right, see you later.